ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
In an ordinary Sydney suburb, a family lives unnoticed.
He came across so innocent.
Father and son keep mostly to themselves.
We didn't go beyond the friendly nod or hello.
But behind closed doors...
Something's gone wrong, big time.
If you don't make phone calls, nobody can tap you.
A new three-part series investigates how the road to Bondi began long before the first shots rang out. The Road to Bondi. Search Background Briefing wherever you get your podcasts.
Donald Trump has lost one of his most senior intelligence officials. His counter-terrorism chief has quit over the war in Iran, in part because he says pressure from Israel, not an imminent threat from Iran, led the US president to start the conflict. Today, Hussein Abish from the Arab Gulf States Institute on Benjamin Netanyahu's goals and how long he wants the fight to last. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Hussein, let's start by discussing Joe Kent, the director of the National Counterterrorism Centre, who has become the first senior member of the Trump administration to quit over the war. Now, tell me about the letter that he posted online explaining that decision.
It is very significant because he really was a key player. What he says in the letter, which is, you know, a formal letter of resignation, and he says, I support you, I agree with your policies, etc. But he says three really crucial things, I think. One is that the intelligence does not support the claim that Iran was posing an imminent threat. The second crucial thing is he says that while he supports Trump's agenda, basically Americans didn't vote for this. And the third thing he says is that it's all being done because Donald Trump is responding to pressure from Israel. And this goes to the heart of the divisions in the MAGA constituency. Those who are deeply attached to Israel for one reason or another, you know, a lot of the evangelical Christian base fall into this category. Others are current or former neoconservatives who look to Trump as the next, you know, sort of imperial president, and wealthy Jewish donors who have, you know, a fellow feeling with Israel, and others. So there is this powerful set of constituencies. But what Joe Kent is saying is, you've been hoodwinked by Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's talked you into doing this, and we're carrying Israel's water for them, and it's not dignified, and I can't be a part of it. So those are three pretty explosive claims.
Well, we'll come to in a moment exactly what it is that Benjamin Netanyahu wants from this war. But this is, what, a war that Netanyahu wanted far more than Donald Trump did. Is that clear?
Oh, I think without a doubt. Israeli officials have been pressing administrations for a couple of decades now to do something like this, to launch an all-out attack on Iran. I mean, Trump has been ambivalent about this kind of use of force. Now, he does get intoxicated by the power of the American military. You can see it. You can see him swelling with pride when he talks about my generals and my army and everything. It's a toy. It's a shiny toy, and it goes boom, and he likes it very much.
If these gorgeous B-2 bombers, give me that bomber, Andrews. Let me just hug that little sucker. Give me that bomber over there. Thank you. You knew immediately which one. This looks small, but in person it's very big.
The key thing for him is that America should not die in large numbers. Because when American service personnel start dying in the triple digits, in large numbers, Americans get upset. And they want to know why. And then they start to look at the situation. Because right now, most of the country is barely aware that this is happening. They know there's some bombs going off, but they really couldn't have a coherent discussion about it, not because they're stupid, but because they're busy and they're concentrating on other things and it doesn't seem to affect their lives. So, yeah, I think Trump is very wary of the reaction of the public if he is seen to have led the United States into a war, an avoidable war. There is this sense that, yeah, that Trump may be vulnerable to accusations that he's doing this in behalf of Israel.
Of course, at the start of the war, there was that explanation from the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, that the US had attacked Iran because Israel was going to strike regardless, and then Iran would retaliate against America.
There absolutely was an imminent threat, and the imminent threat was that we knew that if Iran was attacked, and we believed they would be attacked, that they would immediately come after us. And we were not going to sit there and absorb a blow before we responded.
Because the logic is this. It's defensive because Israel was going to attack Iran, and then there is the assumption that Iran would have struck at Americans in Iraq and around the Middle East. And therefore, to preempt Iran's potential retaliation to a hypothetical Israeli attack, this then becomes defensive. It could hardly be more convoluted.
Yeah, and it's Israel who's saying that has expanded this war, yeah, hasn't it? You've just spent 2 months in Lebanon in Beirut. Israel is striking Lebanon after Hezbollah rockets were launched towards it. It's even sent in troops now in limited numbers, hasn't it?
Definitely. You could look at it that way, or you could look at it, as I think I would, as a parallel conflict that is independent of what's happening between Israel and the United States on the one hand and Iran on the other hand. There is a connection in the sense that Israel is trying to deliver a moral blow to Iran's most important, well-developed, long-standing proxy client, ally, whatever you want to call them, in the Arab world, which is Hezbollah. Right, Israel is going into Lebanon once again to wipe out a guerrilla force that they call terrorists and that, you know, may indeed earn that name. So they're going to give Hezbollah an opportunity to do the one and only thing they're really good at, which is fighting Israeli occupation troops in southern Lebanon.
So this is a war within a war, but you don't think Israel can wipe out Hezbollah, which is what it wants to do?
Well, Hezbollah has nowhere to go to, and no, you know, it is part of Lebanese society. It is still deeply rooted in the country. Hezbollah is not going to go anywhere.
Well, Hussein, let's turn our attention back to Iran and consider what it is that Benjamin Netanyahu wants out of that war. We know Donald Trump keeps changing his stated aims, but what do we know about what the Israeli leader wants? What's the end game for him?
Yeah, well, I mean, he says he wants the people of Iran to rise up and overthrow the government. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, I mean, it's hard to imagine, it really, really was not, it was less than 2 months ago, that Iranian forces opened fire on protesters all over the country, killing at least 7,000 and possibly up to 30,000 in a couple of days. It was an extraordinary massacre, and no government, no matter how brutal, would behave like that if they did not believe that they were being threatened with overthrow, with extinction by their own people. Now, here's the problem. Human beings don't usually welcome their countries being bombed, even if they hate the regime. Typically, they'll just go underground and keep quiet, or in many cases, rally around the flag and say, well, we, you know, can't stand this regime, but we don't like our country being attacked by others. And, you know, there is one other point, which is that for decades, since its founding in 1979, the regime in Iran has been telling the Iranian people that there's a great Satan and a little Satan, Israel and the U.S., that are just dying to attack Iran and kill Iranians. And the problem is now, of course, that's actually happening. And it might give some people in Iran pause to think, well, wait a minute, maybe there's something to that, after all. I can't imagine it hasn't occurred to some people who have laughed at the idea in the past.
Well, if regime change is what Israel wants, which it clearly is, it did have another win, though, didn't it? Because it has killed Iran's top national security official, Ali Barijani. How significant is that in terms of the stability of the regime?
Well, So he was put in charge by Ali Khamenei. I think Khamenei, as I was saying in public lectures in Beirut before the war started, expected to die. He gave the nuclear file to Larijani. He put him in charge of the negotiations with Washington, but also in charge of Iran's response to any potential attack. So he is the man who was responsible for Iran's part in all of this. His loss is certainly significant. But the thing about the Islamic Republic of Iran, it is a very institutionalized, quasi-theocratic, but actually more of a national security state. There is a whole system in place designed exactly to counter this kind of thing. And it goes down to the level of orders to the Iranian military and IRGC, Revolutionary Guards, in other words, all the men at arms who are, that if command and control breaks down, they should start operating at a very fragmented, localized level. This has been planned out by Iran. Iran expected its command and control to be targeted and disabled and crippled.
If Netanyahu wants the regime to change, Hussein, does that mean that he would want this war to continue for longer than Donald Trump would perhaps want it to?
Probably, yes. Until regime change or state and society collapse, one or the other occurs in Iran, it is probably the case that Netanyahu and his cabinet would want to keep bombing Iran periodically. That, in other words, they might not keep up the same pace, the same intensity, because you run out of targets and things like that. But I think the idea would be, you know, to periodically attack Iran on a monthly basis or a weekly basis. I really don't know, but you get the idea. In other words, the notion of an open-ended campaign of aerial bombardment against Iran has some merits in Israeli eyes, not in American eyes. And the other thing is that I want to emphasize state failure and social collapse is clearly an acceptable outcome from Israel's point of view. I think the Israelis would consider that a big improvement over the past few decades. And while not ideal, perhaps, they could definitely live with it.
All right. There's also a huge political motivation for Netanyahu, too, isn't there? Because he has an election this year. And this works well for him in the public's mind, does it?
Yeah, I mean, so far, yes. Israelis are euphoric about this. They finally got the Americans to go on in attacking Iran, and not just its nuclear facilities, but in the whole state structure, even desalination plants. Trump is being led by Netanyahu in the direction Netanyahu wants. I think there's no doubt about it. And it is playing well in Israel. And he does have to be very concerned because his poll numbers have been really bad. But he's the great survivor in Israeli politics. And my analysis is that he knows he is unlikely to be the number one pick for prime minister in the eyes of a majority of Israelis or even a plurality of Israelis. So what he's worked to do is to make himself the widest possible accepted number two. In other words, if people get their second choice, they won't pick Netanyahu for the top job instinctively or automatically. What they do is think that, well, he's okay. We can always live with him. He'll be all right. And that gives you, in a system like the Israeli one, that gives you the ability to cobble together a coalition that can survive votes of no confidence. And that's the game.
Well, Hussein, Benjamin Netanyahu has been clear from the start that he wants to remove Iran as a threat to Israel forever. But does this war do that? Does it actually improve the security of the Israeli people?
So in the short run, maybe. a degraded Iran with much less capability might be less threatening if you accept all this logic, you know, in the short run. But in the long run, if you end up with a radicalized Iranian regime that is angry and sullen and brooding and looking for vengeance and nuclear breakout, you end up with, kind of Middle Eastern North Korea on your hands, which Iran really has not been, but it could become.
Hussein Avish is from the Arab Gulf States Institute. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Coney. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily will be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.